This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. That means, of course, Jeff Stein stopping by a little bit later on. Jamie Becker Finn, too. The latest on chronic wasting disease. As a matter of fact, apparently a farm in Wisconsin shipped a bunch of sick deer into Minnesota. We got to talk to the representative about this, and we've talked to her as well as others about chronic wasting disease. It's definitely a threat. Definitely to the deer population of Minnesota. Patrick is here with us. Hello, Patrick. How are we today?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, although I'm contemplating something. Of course, do you know that we're going to have yet a new professional sports team here in town, a women's soccer team? And I'm not sure what the name of the league is, but there's a professional women's soccer league that's going to start up. All right.
Oh, this is a startup. It's not going to be part of the NWSL.
I don't know. We have Minnesota soccer team name options. I'm not sure. I mean, I know we got a Minnesota team, but the Minnesota women's soccer is looking for a new name. They're looking for a name. Okay. This is the list of names they have put out. Okay. Minnesota Aurora. Now these are, like I said, these are their potential team names: the Minnesota Aurora, the Minnesota Dark Sky, the Minnesota Foxfire, the Minnesota Myriad, the Minnesota Red Pines, the Minnesota Suffragettes, the Minnesota Temperance, the Minnesota Violets, the Minnesota Vortex, the Minnesota Whitetails. Then they do something here that I am just not a fan of. They reverse it and put the nickname first. So Arctic Minnesota, Black Oak Minnesota, Iron Minnesota, Portage Minnesota, River Minnesota, Roaring Minnesota. I don't know. It's like Minnesota River. Why can't you just be the Minnesota River? I don't know. That just doesn't sound right to me. But I just want to say, I don't know. These are great names. Some of them are a little bit of a reach. Myriad? Foxfire is probably my favorite of the group. The Minnesota Foxfire. That's not bad. Aurora has gotten a lot of people like Aurora. Anyone that jump out at you, Patrick?
Aurora was the one that I liked out of that group.
Yeah. Whitetails, Vortex. And granted, I mean, it's hard to kind of convey a fear in your opponent when you're the Violets or the Whitetails, the Red Pines, you know. Not exactly, vicious creatures. I've not exactly known them as that.
Well, I mean, to go off on a tangent, though, a lot of people are still asking after 20 years, what is a Wild?
The Minnesota Wild. Well, and that was, I don't know. I like the Wild. I like hockey. I watch hockey. I can't afford to go to a game anymore. My God. I mean, that's the People's Stadium, bull crud. But you can't get into a game. But at the same time, I got to tell you the truth. I was never a fan of the Wild. I liked the Polars. I think that was the other name that was out there at the time, the Minnesota Polars. And, I think sometimes people get too clever. They try to outthink themselves. And the Minnesota River is a good name for a team. But River Minnesota, look, we're being contrarian. Really? The Minnesota Iron is not a bad name, I don't think. I mean, I don't think that's a bad name at all. But Iron Minnesota, and it's kind of hard. I mean, I love Minnesota United FC, and I get the idea of naming these clubs in the soccer realm like European clubs, but they're the Loons. Everyone calls them the Loons. And so you get known by the nickname. I don't know if the Violets, the Temperance, I don't know. Foxfire, Aurora seem to be the two that that, you know, the Minnesota Arctic, if you just want to just reverse it, Minnesota Arctic is a great name. I think actually that works, but Arctic Minnesota, I just don't think it does. And I'm not saying this in the sense of being the quality of the product, the team, or anything like that. It just is, it's kind of the marketing standard of it. You know, it's, it's, I think you're just getting too cutesy. And I think you're getting too, you're just, like I said, I think you're outthinking yourself. You know what I mean? I don't know. So Aurora's your call. If they were willing to flip-flop the names and go with Minnesota Arctic, I might go with that one. But if they're not, I'd go with Minnesota Foxfire has been my choice. The rest of them, I'm not sure they're good. I'm not sure they're good. I don't know what fifth grade class came up with these names, but it's, you know, there's always one or two winners. The rest, I think we can eliminate them in the first round. So just in a marketing standpoint, go with Foxfire, go with Aurora. A lot of people like Aurora, the Minnesota Aurora. But is that going to be like the rural juror? One of the best running, you know, that and Bob Blah Blah. Those are two of the best running bits on TV in the last in 20 years. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I want to start off today not with just pithy comments about sports teams' names, but once again, we've got a case. There has been some movement on the St. Cloud case, athlete case, as well as also another athlete-related crime allegedly that it might have happened up in Proctor. Now I'll get to the Proctor one here in a second, but I want to get to the case up in St. Cloud, because we have talked about this, and kind of give you the background details. A kid that was up there. Let's see if I can find his name. I know it's listed here in this. Waldorp. Waldorp, yeah, is his name. And forgive me, like I said, I'm shuffling through my briefs here. Dun, 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 dun. All right. This kid comes out. He's a St. Cloud State University student. He's a swimmer for the team. At a week ago this last Saturday, in the early morning of that Saturday, about 1:30, he hears a scream out on the street, outside of his house. So he goes out to investigate. He finds a student athlete and apparently his girlfriend out there. He says, is everything okay? The guy says, turn around, mind your own business, something to that effect. I'm not exactly sure what exactly was stated. But the swimmer basically turns around to go back inside his house. And this athlete, who is a wrestler for St. Cloud State, cold cocks him. Knocks him unconscious, allegedly, but there's apparently quite a few witnesses to this crime, and proceeds to absolutely annihilate this kid's face while he's unconscious, fracturing eye sockets, breaking his nose, he cracked teeth. I mean, this is not a drunk fight in a bar. This is not a fight for honor. This is just a psychopath rage hitting someone else. I mean, it is clearly someone out of control and someone that should not be on the streets. Frankly, I mean, clearly, whoever did this crime, and considering all the eyewitnesses, I think we know who did. That man needs a mental evaluation and should not be on the streets, period. So this happened at 1:30 in the morning. And then, by the way, not only did he and his girlfriend then take the very injured body and try to hide it initially, I guess, in this kid's yard, but then broke and entered into this guy's house, threw the kid in there, and then fled the scene of the crime. I mean, we've got a litany of crimes that were committed here by this guy. But needless to say, I mean, clearly the one that's the scariest is this kid is, it sounds like he's this athlete, this wrestler that allegedly did this. If they're guilty of this, I mean, he needs some serious mental evaluation. Well, we do have, finally, a week and a half after eyewitnesses said it is. You've got this beaten student. The only thing we've been able to figure out is that the only reason this kid has not been arrested at this point is because he's really good at sports, in this case, wrestling. I'll get to that in a second. A student athlete at St. Cloud State University is facing potential criminal charges after being arrested in connection with what police say was an assault on a fellow student. St. Cloud police say officers were dispatched to an address on the 700 block of 8th Street South early in the morning of September 18th on reports of a fight. Arriving officers eventually located a 20-year-old man inside a home suffering from injuries to his head and face described as serious but threatening. Investigators from the departments, well, and I mean, by the way, you can say, this is once again, I think that the described as non-life-threatening, dude, you beat this man's head while he was unconscious. He's bleeding profusely, and you chucked him in, unconscious, beating, bleeding. I'm not a medicine man, but I know that you could have this guy choked to death on his own blood. In, you know, fairly easily. So I once again, I think the non-life-threatening element of the story seems to be, it's like, hey, come on, let's not make the criminal look too bad. I'm tired of that. Dear God, I mean, that what this guy did to this kid is freaking inexcusable. Investigators for the department's community response team were able to identify the alleged assailant as 20-year-old SCSU wrestler who was arrested on September 28th, which is yesterday, and booked into the Stearns County Jail on probable cause of felony. Now, once again, this crime happened on the 18th and at 1:30 in the morning. If this crime would have happened in Minneapolis and an athlete, I guarantee you, you would have had an arrest by, say, 4 or 5 the next morning. You probably would have. In St. Paul, it would have been the same thing. And I guarantee you, you wouldn't be sitting there saying, hey, the injuries don't look that bad. No, you'd have people saying, that guy nearly beat that other guy to death. But here it is, because the guy can do sports. 10 days it took them, this crack police department in St. Cloud, 10 days it took them to arrest this guy. Wow, that is stunning. St. Cloud police and the suspect's defense attorney claim the man arrested is Isaiah Marcel Gomez Oropeza, O-R-O-P-E-Z-A, Oropeza. Of Burnsville. Isaiah Oropeza of Burnsville. Police say official charges in the case could come as early as Thursday. Really? The assault happened on the 18th. There are witnesses. You pretty much have this guy dead to the rights, and it's taking you 11 days to get charges filed on Oropeza. Care 11 has this story. They did not typically name the suspects. However, Oropeza's name is being published at the time due to the nature of the case and the identification provided by his attorney. SCSU's website lists Oropeza as a Huskies wrestling team roster. Jail records show Oropeza is no longer being held as of Wednesday morning. A petition posted on thechange.org by the injured man's father identifies the victim as Chad Waldorp. The petition says the 20-year-old SESU swimmer is headed back to Charleston, South Carolina to undergo several surgeries to correct facial injuries. The petition also says Waldorp will miss at least a semester of school while he recovers. To date, more than 8,300 people have signed the petition titled Justice for Chad. University officials confirmed the off-campus incident in a social media post on Saturday, saying that the safety of students and employees is a top priority. SCSU added student conduct investigation moving forward. Oh, really? Are you putting him on double secret probation for nearly beating a man to death? Oh, okay. Oropeza, here's the thing. I mean, here's why I think this is really taking so long. Is this guy apparently is actually a pretty good wrestler. He was apparently the state champ at 220 is the high school level. which would be, I'm presuming, heavyweight, in AAA in 2019. Last year, before everything got shut down, he apparently was finishing third in regional qualifiers and stuff like that. So it looked like he was heading on into some national champions. So, I mean, this guy is apparently a good, really good wrestler, which would be why I think the reason why this guy is being treated with kid gloves is because sports. And I find it to be incredibly infuriating that here we have yet another case where, once again, eyewitnesses, you have seriously, what this guy did to the swimmer is mentally, he's mentally damaged. You just, not normal human beings don't do this, allegedly. And Oropeza just, then to try to stash the body, then try to run away from the scene of the crime. That's not a good kid. This is a piece of scum, allegedly, who should have been arrested by that morning. And I need to know, I want to know, did the athletic department, did the wrestling coaches, were people saying, wait a second here, he's a good kid, accidents happen, let's let all the facts come on out. Because you got a kid, one kid, who's having to go back home, who's going to miss an entire semester of school and have to have multiple face reconstruction surgeries because this animal decided to pound on him in the street. And there are witnesses. Was anyone from the wrestling team or the athletic program or the university going around saying, hey, come on, let's talk about it. I mean, you know, hey, yeah, a violent attack, but do you really want to see this kid's career ended? Come on, he's a good wrestler. Did anyone do that? I want to know. Because it doesn't make any damn sense why it took 11 days to 10 days to arrest the guy, and it's going to take 11 days to file charges against him, because this one seems pretty freaking cut and dry at this point. 952-946-6205. I'll get to the story when I come back from Proctor, which is also got a case which I'm a little, more than a little wary about. We'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein coming up in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. You had eyewitnesses. You know, it's not like they said they thought he was the guy, and you have to do it. I mean, I can understand 10 days if you didn't have anyone that could positively ID with the guy, but it sounds like from the get-go, they knew it was an athlete from St. Cloud State, so they knew that who was involved. I do not understand how in the world that took that long to arrest the guy and to file charges, because, like I said, you have witnesses. And do you really want a person like that walking the streets? Seriously, do you want a person like that out walking the streets? Allegedly? I mean, yeah, you deserve your day in court, but there's a lot of eyewitnesses and apparently a lot of evidence against you. So, yeah, but you get your day in court. Until then, you're allegedly the attacker. But would you want anyone allegedly or confirmed like that was potentially an attacker like that walking the street? I don't think so. 952-946-6205. The Proctor School Board quickly dismissed any notion it would discuss the recent allegations of misconduct among the high school's football team during its most recent meeting. The board gathered at 7 p.m. on Monday for its first meeting since last week's report of misconduct involving the Proctor High School football teams. Proctor School Board Chair Jennifer McDonald, minutes into the meeting and prior to public statement comment period, said they would not allow comments on situations surrounding recent recent concerns over student misconduct. Listing off two data privacy laws, McDonald said the board can't and won't be commenting further on the ongoing police investigation involving our football program. No mention of the incident was included on the meeting agenda. The school has offered few details about who was involved and the nature of the incident, citing the Minnesota Data Privacy Act and the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act. But the incident prompted the school to put the football activities on hold for the time being. I mean, they literally shut down their football team in the middle of football season. On Tuesday's afternoon, a group planned a demonstration near the high school to show support for the victim of the alleged incident and their family. Kent Gatiss, chief of Proctor Police Department, has asked anyone with information about the alleged misconduct to contact the school resource officer or the police department. I will say this. This sounds pretty ugly from what I have heard about it so far, because there have been a few people that have made a comment to me about what it possibly could have been. It sounds like, I mean, from this, the way it's being treated, it sounds like either a sexual assault or, and what we call hazing, but what, the very, I had a very good listener, Heather, today point out, it's like, don't call it hazing. It's not hazing. It's assault. They assaulted the kid. So we call it extreme hazing, but I mean, it's just, that's a non-sexual assault. Or could it be? I don't know. It depends on what exactly happened here. Ed Schaefer, Proctor High School football team, team in Proctor, Minnesota, is under investigation for what's being termed as a student misconduct. News coverage has not been made it past the Twin Cities. No information is being released of any kind at this time. Allegedly, there are videos of the incident on Snapchat for some time, but that does not appear to have been enough for the investigation. What? You got videos of the crime and you're... Okay. Oh, that's right. Athletes are involved. Come on. Think about the athletes. Jesus. God, we are screwed up society, aren't we? You could have someone who wins the Nobel Peace Prize. But if they rape someone, I don't care about what possibly, they could be doing. They're a rapist and they need to be arrested. Don't give me this crap about... Well, do you really want to hurt these kids? I mean, well, apparently they hurt someone else. And what message do you send to the victims of such abuse, that in whatever the case may be here, if you basically say, come on, let's let bygones be bygones. Why aren't you being a pal after the assault that happened to you? Why aren't you letting this go? God, just disturbing. I don't know what's going on here, but someone needs to clarify it. Because those allegedly involved are minors, no details can be released at this time. Rumors are quickly spreading in the North Shore to the Twin Cities as a bunch of the lack of the information. Like I said, my guess is it's going to be either sexual assault or some sort of extreme hazing assault. The alleged actions, which appear to have video footage, is entirely inexcusable, and the alleged abuser should be charged to the absolute fullest extent of the law. This is the same school that recently had a middle school teacher and former district basketball coach arrested on suspicion of sexual assault. People consistently turn a blind eye to bullying and hazing in high school and high school athletics. Proctor High School continues to prove why more attention is needed and much stricter rules and punishments require. We'll have to see. I mean, once again, it's what are we seeing? What we saw in St. Cloud is all of a sudden they start circling the wagons, and they basically we got to protect the kids. Well, you did a pretty crap job of protecting the kids. And let's just say this. I mean, if this is an extreme hazing, if this is a sexual assault, whatever the case may be, stop talking about protecting the kids, because you already failed at protecting the kids. Admit what the heck happened here, and if there was a crime that did happen, well, make some damn arrests and not concern yourself with the ability of that individual to play a certain sport, for goodness sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll change directions dramatically. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff.
AM 950, the Progressive Jeff, Voice of Minnesota. Jeff, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. Of course, the Iowa Business Report's the daily show he does down in Iowa. And, of course, he joins us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where you, of course, get the Iowa Politics Report. Hi, Jeff.
Is there nothing he doesn't do?
grabbing microphones at every turn. What an absolute hog.
Yeah, he needs the attention.
What an insecure individual.
Oh, well, yeah, in our industry, there's no one who's insecure. Holy God.
Yeah, I'm kind of a unicorn. You're right.
It's a prerequisite to be in radio. Okay, so let's talk debt ceiling first. Is the country driving off the cliff tomorrow or not?
Yeah, we're driving off the cliff. The only good news is that we still have money for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so it's not as instantaneous, but no, this thing's falling apart quickly because of the fact that everything was, in some people's minds, tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the danger, right? When you have an all or nothing bet, if you will, sometimes it comes up with nothing.
One of the things I find to be interesting, Yellen, her comments in regards to this, saying by, I think, October 18th, if that's the case, that's when things really get bad.
Right.
Now, I don't think that's going to get there. I mean, someone has said within the first week of us not having the debt ceiling, about $15 trillion worth of wealth will disappear in this country. And the reality is the people... The reality is that the people that have the money that bankroll the Republicans, they're going to, I don't think that they're going to necessarily tolerate losing all their money. So I think there's going to be some phone calls made saying, whatever problem you have with this, get over it and basically get that debt ceiling raised.
There's an idea, Matt, you're right, of saying, okay, you have now made your point, and now it's time to be a grown-up. And that's kind of what you have with all of this, right? Everybody's trying to make a point. But at some point, the whole idea is to be a grown-up and get the people's work done, because the backlash will be too great. And it's not just on the issue of debt ceiling. It's on the issue of the reconciliation. Is it tied to bipartisan infrastructure, et cetera? This is still a time when a lot of people are digging their heels in on principle. But at some point, the voters on both sides of the, all sides, I should say, the political spectrum, there are not two sides, all sides of the political spectrum are going to expect work to be done, as opposed to a bunch of petulant children taking their marbles and going home and they get mad.
When we did not have, when Cruz shut the thing down, remember that a few years back?
Yes.
When Cruz shut this thing down, and he basically said that you know, I'm going to do this on principle. I think we ended up losing somewhere around $300 million before they got things started back up. How much, I know this is kind of a little bit of a question on this one, but I think the fact that no one held that guy accountable for that, no one said, hey, you know what, this one individual is responsible for this much waste because he wanted to make a stupid political statement. The fact that no one did hold him accountable leads me to say, I think the reason why the Republicans are willing to go down this road right now is because they don't feel as if they're going to be held accountable if the economy crumbles, because no one held the people accountable that did this before.
This is the miscalculation. All right. Yes, the Republicans are saying, oh, look, Democrats control all of the government. They have made that the talking point. This is a Democrat government, so let Democrats fix the problem. You know, it's kind of like, you wanted to have the job, you just go ahead and have it. Well, that's all well and good, but that's a nuanced argument to some degree, Matt, because you've got citizens who are saying, really? You're standing in the way of fill in the blank here. What about when we get to the point where the government runs out of money? You know, I mean, there are all of these things. It sounds great in the abstract, but what these politicians don't understand is that Congress, quote unquote, is looked at as a single entity. And voters don't go and say, you know, those Democrats sure made a mess of things. Thank goodness the Republicans were obstructionists. I'm voting GOP. No, they vote the whole, you know, get rid of the whole mess of them. And so it does not have the staying power that they think it has. It never has before. I don't know why they would think it would work this time to have a nuanced argument.
Well, and I think, too, they love the idea of being able to say, hey, because of the filibuster, we were able to stop the Democrats from doing something, which they're very proud of. And that's exactly what happened here. They didn't even allow a vote on raising the debt ceiling because they used the filibuster to stop that vote from happening. But at the same time, then they scream, well, you can't get rid of the filibuster. And as much as they want to say, well, the Democrats have complete control, they hang their hats daily and proudly on the fact that they can shut down the Democrats system because the Democrats just don't have the guts to kill the filibuster as they should have.
Well, here's something that if, in fact, the Republican plan works, as in they take back the House, they take back the Senate, one or the other, I seriously doubt it'll be the Senate, if either. But let's just play along.
Yeah.
Republicans get the Senate. Are they going to kill off the filibuster? Because this is the thing they've been saying all along, right? Oh, no, when we were the majority party, we did not get rid of the filibuster. Okay, how about next time you're in charge? I just can't imagine it being retained. So in other words, don't get rid of it now. What's to say the Republicans won't get rid of it the next time they're in power, perhaps in a year and a half, perhaps in 10 years?
Well, can I tell you, the one thing I think about with that is, I think what would happen is McConnell would get rid of the filibuster. He'd basically say, we're not going to have a filibuster as long as I'm in charge. And then the second the Republicans lost the Senate, they'd reinstall the filibuster at the very end, right before they had to hand over power to the Democratic majority. And then the best part would be the Democrats saying, after 2 years, 4 years of not being able to stop anything with the filibuster, the arguments about how we need to keep the filibuster in there. I mean, I can already see that cab coming down the street.
That's an evil way to think. How dare you think?
Well, but it is the truth, for goodness sakes.
How dare you think politicians would do such a thing? They're just there, Matt, to serve the American people. What's the matter with you, you cynical radio host?
Oh, gosh. How many times can they kick the sand in the Democrats' face without them saying, you better not do it again? It is kind of comical because clearly at this point, I mean, McConnell, as much as he likes to say, well, I didn't get rid of the filibuster, he got rid of the filibuster on a lot of things the last 2 years. And just, I guess, you know, begging and pleading that he allowed the Democrats to do the same thing that they did in the last two. But at the same time, I think there are just too many moderate Democrats who would say, come on, we have to give them the chance to derail our entire agenda. And they just don't understand it.
Yeah, phrase that way. Yeah. Come on, we've got to give them the chance to derail our entire agenda.
Well, tell me what it is. That's what it is.
But now I have this image of Chuck Schumer as the stereotypical 98-pound weakling in a Charles Atlas ad from the 1940s, you know. But anyway, reconciliation, I think, is where the real action is. Yes, the debt ceiling, that's a big deal. There's no question, because that has huge ramifications. And if there is anything that they could sort of do the old, all right, let's just do this and get it over with, it's probably raising the debt ceiling. Because, again, that's one of those sort of have-to-do things, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you can just call MasterCard and get your limit up. They have to go through a whole process. The real action is what's going to happen with infrastructure and reconciliation. Did you see the comments that Joe Manchin made, apparently, within the past, I guess, hour?
No.
He issued a statement, and he's talking about reconciliation. And there are quotes like, definition of fiscal insanity. He says he does not want to re-engineer the social and economic fabric of this nation or vengefully tax goodness. And he's got a D by his name and says those things. So, I mean, good luck on getting some of this through. Apparently, his meeting at the White House yesterday was not persuasive, shall we say?
Well, Sinema and Manchin are basically Republicans that they realize they can't win on the Republican ticket anymore, so they just put a D next to their name and then act as if, you know, they clearly are siding with the Republican Party. And that's the problem of the Democrats, though, because the Democrats try to put out this idea of this huge, wide umbrella, and you can't have... in my mind, you can't have a Manchin and a Bernie Sanders under the same umbrella. It's just too wide of a political spectrum. And yet they sit there, and I think that if they could take someone further of the left of Bernie, take someone further of the right of Manchin, they'd pat them on themselves on the back and act like they've done something right.
That's such an excellent point, because, again, it's not that they're diametrically opposed, but they certainly seem to be farther apart from one another than, as you note, Manchin might be with a Republican in something like this. And this is the danger you have when you try to go big and your majority is small or tie break, right? I mean, if you were talking about 55-45 in favor of Democrats in the Senate, this is not a conversation, right? If you had a majority where you could lose 12 to 15 seats in the House, you're not having this conversation. This stuff gets done. Now, you know, and the audience knows if they've been around more than 5 minutes, I don't believe in straight voting. Mm-hmm. I believe in evaluating race by race. And if it so happens that you happen to vote for everybody of a certain political persuasion, great. But the arbitrary just, you know, well, they're a D, so I'm voting for them. No, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. But when you have fragmentation, you have a stalemate in government like this, right? 50-50 Senate. Tell me how you could get any closer. You can't, right? And what can the Democrats lose in the House? Four?
Mm-hmm.
That's not, I mean, it's hard to do a big lift, in other words, which is what the progressives are demanding. And I applaud them for standing by their guns, you know, whether I agree with it or not. They're saying, look, we have the majority. Stop telling us to wait our turn. We have the majority. Let's get stuff done. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough to do when you've got these razor thin majority numbers.
And by the way, it's more of the individual Democratic parties in Arizona and West Virginia that the problem here, because, well, Sinema, you know, first, really kind of first term, but Manchin, why the Democrats haven't run him out on a primary, I don't know, but that's on them. You could fix that one fairly easily. And I know that they might lose West Virginia, but do you really have West Virginia right now? I don't think you do. Biden, of course, has a ability to negotiate. I still don't think it's too far out of the realm that he finds one or two moderate of the remaining moderate Republicans, and especially with that infrastructure bill, especially with the amount of pork that's going to be in that thing, you basically can get a few of those votes and then basically make Manchin and Sinema, you know, irrelevant.
Well, I see that Woody Harrelson is visiting the Capitol today in Des Moines, so maybe he can get everybody to chill out. I'm not kidding. I'm looking at a photo on Twitter, so it must be true.
Okay.
No, with regard to, well, how many Republicans voted for the bipartisan infrastructure bill? 19?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a pretty large number that you could draw from if you wanted to try to poach somebody, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, actually.
And now, I don't know that this is the direction it's going to go. But for example, one of the 19 is U.S. Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, who served with Biden. When Biden was sworn in, he said his job is, if the president needs help advancing an agenda that's good for the country, then it's his job as a U.S. senator to work with the president. He also, when I asked him if Donald Trump was the leader of the Republican Party, said there is no leader of the Republican Party and there won't be until the nominating convention of 2024. And that same Senator Grassley announced, since you and I talked last, that he was running for reelection.
Wow.
So I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Well, and also, and you bring this up with Grassley, you go back to everything you've always said. It's, you know, politics is kitchen table. It's bread and butter. If all of a sudden Grassley can come on out there and in that bill, and a bill all of a sudden comes, you know, say 20 bridges or something like that, you know, he knows he will win easy a reelection campaign if he can just point, you see that bridge over there? Me. And you know, he really does have a point. It's like, especially if you do cross that line, if you are a Democrat in a state or a Republican in a state which is not necessarily a guaranteed Republican vote, that's one way to guarantee you are going to go back into the Senate again.
At the risk of being accused of dropping something.
Uh-oh.
But occasionally Senator Grassley comes on my radio program.
Oh, does he now?
You have people on. You have elected officials on your program, I trust. Don't even try.
Of course.
But the point is, we did a poll question because Senator Ernst voted against the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Senator Grassley voted in favor, and we did a poll, and it was like 93% said she was right and he was wrong. So I said, so tell Iowans why you voted for it. And I'm going to summarize, but what he said was, we've been talking about infrastructure 6 years. Trump wanted more money than this for infrastructure. Everybody said they wanted infrastructure when Trump was president. So I figured after telling everybody I was going to vote for infrastructure, I'd better vote for infrastructure. And there's some logic there, but that's why it doesn't work in a political conversation, right?
Yes.
All of these Republicans said, why, yes, $2 trillion, Mr. President Trump, we would love to put that through. And they didn't. And so this is less money for the roads and bridges and broadband and all that stuff, not the human infrastructure. So in one respect, and again, I go back to nuanced arguments, but if you think about how many Republicans, Matt, when Trump was president, said, oh, yes, that'd be a wonderful bill, they don't because of who's in the White House. That's the definition of fiscal insanity, to use Senator Manchin's phrase.
It's like I said, they like to forget that during the Trump administration, the reason why that deficit has a huge hole in it is because of that Trump bill. And they all gleefully voted for it, but now all of a sudden the debt ceiling needs to be raised, and all of a sudden it's game of hot potato. We'll take a break. Come on back. Miley testifying in Capitol Hill, plus Corey Lewandowski, a god-awful, ugly story for Republicans as a whole, but clearly a problem there. We'll get to that in a second. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us with his usual weekly visit. Jeff, General Miley went up on Capitol Hill. You know, there is a real bipolar treatment of the guy going on right now by the Republicans, because on one side, they want to call him a traitor and demand his resignation. On the other, they're trying desperately to get him to smear Biden. And, you know, sometimes you just can't play politics with something. And it was the exchange between him and Cotton yesterday, where Cotton was like, why don't you resign? It's like, don't you understand how the military works? That's a political statement. If I resign, that's not my job. I offer advice. He's the elected president. He can take it or not take it. That's the gig. And you know, especially since Cotton was in the military, it just, to me, just showed me how consumed by politics right now a lot of people in the Republican Party are, that they don't even see that demanding political actions from military leaders is not really something that's going to happen.
By the way, before I answer, can I mention the names of other people I've had on my program?
I'm kidding.
Well, when I talked to Senator Cotton, kidding.
Oh, dear Lord.
Didn't matter who you said I was going to. I have heard a lot of people say, and these are usually retired military people with full pension. Okay, this is an important point. They say, well, yes, there's a chain of command. The president is the commander in chief. But if that order was given, they should have laid their stars on his desk and said, with all due respect, Mr. President, that's a lawful order, but I cannot in good conscience carry it out. Really? That's a pretty bold statement to make when you're retired with your pension, okay? The military is supposed to have a chain of command. You served. You know this is how this works. And to your excellent point, Senator Cotton served. So what would he want field generals to do? Not take the orders from Washington? What would they like the generals in the Joint Chiefs to do? Not take the directive of the commander-in-chief? I thought the whole thing was you issue your recommendation, and then a president ender takes it all under advisement and says, this is the plan, now go carry it out. And it's true, if you don't like it, leave.
Mm-hmm.
But that, again, is a pretty bold statement to make when you're not the one there in uniform in real time with an obligation to your men and women.
We're not a military dictatorship. So henceforth, you know, the military advises, but it's not necessarily have to go. And yeah, it is kind of interesting that they would kind of forget that about the military. I will say this about Miley. It sounds like he's very, you know, as a guy who is a military general, he's playing a very good political game in front of the cameras. It does sound like in private briefings that have gone on, secure briefings, that he has been a little bit more critical of the Biden administration, specifically the State Department, and their lack of acting in time.
Well, there's something else that you mentioned, which was on, and that is these people look to their champions when there's a hint of something in their favor, and then the next day it's the devil, or they were the devil, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, let's embrace this person, because in this one little moment I agree with them. It is so shallow. It is so just disingenuous. And it is so Washington.
Exactly. Finally, Corey Lewandowski. This is ugly. This story is breaking right now. He still is an advisor for Trump. He heads the America Great Again Action Super PAC. Trishelle Odom, the wife of Idaho construction executive John Odom, alleges that Lewandowski reportedly touched her, including her leg and buttocks. If you read the story here, and there are witnesses to this, Lewandowski, who sounds like he was drunk, basically was like a stalker at this event. And she was actually a married woman, was somewhat terrified that he was going to try something, you know, a sexual assault or something like that. I mean, it does sound like, as well, some of the actions do cross that line. But yeah, this is once again one of Trump's close allies. It's not like we didn't know Lewandowski was garbage, but yet Trump does still love the guy and keeps him within his inner circle.
There's a bit of there's a little stiff arm. Okay, I mean, yes, you're right. He gets his calls returned, but I think there's a bit of a distance. But here's the story that I got tipped to today by a common friend of ours who works in Sioux Falls Television. Apparently, the story is that Governor Kristi Noem and Corey Lewandowski have had an ongoing affair that has dated back quite a while.
What?
I will forward you to the point that she tweeted to deny it. So here you have the story about Lewandowski that you just mentioned, which I saw earlier today. The same day, Lewandowski is accused of having an affair with the married governor of South Dakota, which the day before that, the story broke today, she had a full 1 hour in prime time on Newsmax as a town hall, quite clearly establishing her credentials to run for president in 2024 or vice president, should it be Donald Trump as the nominee.
Well, I was going to just say Lewandowski going in there and going and doing this to a bankroller of the Republican Party. That's not going to end well. We got to end it there, though. Thanks for that little bit. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll spotlight this at Iowa Politics Report. Find his books at Next Chapter. Hour 2 is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. Good to have you with us today, and good to welcome back to the show Representative Jamie Becker Finn, the mighty 42B. She's kind enough to join us today to get a latest update on chronic wasting disease, because we got some developments with it and we need to get into this a little bit more. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, always glad to join you.
Well, and you and I and Rick Hansen, Representative Hansen, I've talked to him as well. This is actually a really important story because of the amount of money we have with our deer hunting industry, the fact that hunting is such a part of Minnesota culture, and the fact that this is a real dangerous thing. We do not want to see this disease spread out of control here. Begin with, though, I think one of the things I always like to do is just, if you wouldn't mind just describing, what exactly is CWD, chronic wasting disease?
Yeah, so chronic wasting disease is a prion-based disease. So it's very similar to, the easiest way to think about it is it's similar to mad cow disease, but in deer and cervids. And so it impacts the brain, the neurological system, and it is always fatal when deer have it. And just the thing to sort of keep in mind about CWD is that because it's a prion, you can't treat it the way that you would treat or get rid of bacteria or a fungus or a virus. It's a misfolded protein is what a prion is. So it's a lot harder to sort of squelch out, you know, with just medication or something like that. It's really a difficult thing to deal with.
It is, one of the things that's been interesting about this is that this is something which, to a point, there seems to be some level of bipartisanship that we have to do something about this. But when I talked, I think the last time, to Rick Hansen, Representative Hansen, about it, it sounded like that there was a lot of Republicans that were hesitant to go into the farming side of the of deer, people that raise deer on farms, where there seems to be a lot of problems with this. But now I'm starting to see more and more people ask the question of, okay, if this is such a kind of a fringe farming aspect, why are we going with this if this is going to lead to CWD and it could possibly get out into the wild?
Yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely true. So, you know, to what you alluded to at the beginning, so we have nearly 500,000 Minnesotans deer hunt, and it is something that hunting and fishing are actually in protected rights in our state constitution. And when we're talking about, you know, so it's really a broad group of people that are impacted this. And, you know, for me, you know, my husband and I buy licenses, but our kids eat the food. My parents eat the food. You know, people hunt to eat in many parts of the state. And, you know, I think it's interesting too, you know, folks think of deer hunting as a rural issue, but it really isn't. It's a statewide issue. We actually have the greatest number of licenses, deer hunting licenses are sold in Hennepin County, and then the next largest number of licenses are sold in Ramsey County. So, and here I am as a suburban mom in Ramsey County, talking to you about this. And so the other piece of this is that I always put farming in air quotes, because I think it's important that folks realize that a lot of these operations are not, it's not like your idea of what beef farming is, but it just happens to be deer. A lot of these facilities, including the latest outbreak tied to a facility in Wisconsin, are people who are breeding essentially mutant bucks with very genetically abnormal racks and antlers. And then, you know, there are people who are interested in shooting those animals, or, you know, just having a very like atypical sort of bizarre looking animal. So it's not like just, oh, it's just this industry where they're just like breeding animals for food. There's like this other side of it that's really the most problematic part.
Well, and it's, and for what you're describing there, if, folks, if you've ever been to like a Cabela's or something like that, you'll always see one or two that'll have mounts up there that will have like these really bizarro antlers. And yeah, that's something that people are kind of, it's getting its own following. But once again, it is relatively fringe. How many, do we have the latest number of cases in the wild we found of CWD?
You know, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. The ones in the northern part of the state, which is, you know, really the most concerning because that's kind of the heart of deer hunting territory as far as, you know, a lot of us from the metro and the suburbs travel back home to go up north to go hunting. There's really only been a few, and those have all been linked to, you know, one was found, you know, within half a mile of an infected deer herd, you know, captive farm facility. It's a lot more prevalent in the wild in the southern part of the state, and again, a lot of those overlap with where we have facilities where CWD has been rampant in those facilities as well.
Can you farm deer safely? I mean, I guess that's the blunt question: is can you do this safely, or is this just not something that you can feasibly do and not eventually get CWD running through the herd?
You know, I'm sure that it's possible, but I think from a public policy perspective, we never should have allowed it in the first place. You know, a white-tailed deer is a wild animal, you know, much like all the other wild animals in our state. And for whatever reason, some folks got it into their heads that this is an animal that they should farm. And the reality is that this is really unique. This is the only animal in our whole state where, you know, the very same type of that species is on one side of the fence and the other side of the fence. And that really is the crux of it as far as its spread. And I think, you know, if they were just farming it for meat, they wouldn't have the movement of animals from farm to farm. And that's really why it gets traced back to these facilities, is that you can see, oh, well, they moved this buck to breed here, or they sold this buck here and moved it here, or they sold this one. And it really, it's like one of those crazy scenarios where you've got all these lines pointing all over the place in different directions of how the animals are moving from facility to facility in a way that in the wild, there's no way that animals would cover that amount of ground. And so that's sort of where we're artificially spreading it to parts of the state where it's never been before.
Representative Jamie Becker Finn, kind enough to join us, 42B. You brought this story up. I want to get into this a little bit as well. Two deer farms in Minnesota received animals from a Wisconsin farm, later found dead for CWD. This one farm, Maple Hills Farm, had shipped 387 deer to multiple states, including into Minnesota, since July of 2016. Okay, yeah, we can regulate as much as we want in Minnesota, but what is it like? I mean, are other states trying to even deal with CWD, or is this kind of an issue that's under the radar in many places?
You know, it really varies. So some states, are trying to be very proactive and stop its spread. Other states like Wisconsin and some parts of the West, they waited too long, and it's really common in their wild herd to have animals with CWD. And so that's what we're trying to prevent in Minnesota. I think that hopefully we're not too late, but it's just, it seems like every time we start to make progress on sort of the science of it and ways we might be able to learn more to stop its spread, we just continue to have these for-profit businesses, spreading it to new parts of the state. And so, what my work in the legislature and folks like Representative Hansen and Representative Eklund have been really fighting for years is to get ahead of this before it's too late. And it's getting scarier with every new story that it's spread to more and more parts of our state.
And we also should mention, we go back to the farming thing, there's this one story out of Bring Me the News. It does point out that this is not exactly the most stable. The farming of deer is not the most stable of industries. Two deer went to a now defunct Stillwater farm in 2016, then were transferred to another defunct farm in Grand Meadow. Then the deer were shipped back to Wisconsin. It seems like tracking this issue, that's the real problem, is that all of a sudden, if you find a state like Wisconsin, where apparently they hadn't tested this one farm, they find all the chronic wasting disease, then just trying to track down where this stuff went it sounds like it's incredibly difficult.
It is. We passed a moratorium on the House side several years ago. If I had a message for, whether it's new farmers or folks who own land and are looking for ways to make extra money, this is not the industry we want folks to be going into. It is incredibly volatile, and there's a lot of risk. And what we're finding is even well-intentioned folks, aren't fully grasping or are not able to keep this thing in check, especially when we're sort of moving these animals from place to place for the purposes of, whether it's to show them off or to breed them or for people to, hunt a farm, hunt in air quotes, a farmed animal to have that trophy. Those are not worth, none of those things are worth it to risk our word.
Well, and like you said, just what you just described. I mean, hey, I don't hunt. My family does hunt. I don't hunt, but I understand hunting, and I understand the way it's part of the state. Knowing all the hunters I know, I don't know anyone that hunts in Minnesota that would like to just go out to some farm and blast a deer there. That's right there. That's not hunting. That there's a passion. There's a process that they like doing with this. That is not just, hey, I'll slow down to 20, shoot the round, chuck it in the back, and off I go back home. That's not hunting. And I kind of is bizarre that this entire, business angle of farming of deer has even arisen.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't even need a license, and it doesn't have to be in season, because you're basically, these folks are paying money to shoot a genetically abnormal animal that was bred for the purpose of being shot. Mm-hmm. To your point, as someone who's, I grew up following my dad around in the woods going deer hunting, some of my earliest memories are being out in the woods, and it's more than just a hobby for a lot of folks. For myself as an Ojibwe person, this is a part of my life. It's part of how I feed my kids. It's part of how my ancestors fed their families. And it's how, I hope to continue to be able to provide for my family. And that's, whether you're native or not, that is the truth for a lot of folks. And with CWD, the recommendations from the CDC and researcher after researcher is that you not consume those animals because you risk yourself developing some kind of neurological disease.
Ugh. I've read some of the stories of the old Native American hunts of deer, just amazing, and just the whole process it was. I mean, it's part of the Native American history. How many people, my dad's generation from the Iron Range, had one story? I mean, it's not like they only got one deer, but there was always that one deer story that everyone had, that you the one year you got a really nice deer. I mean, it is part of the culture. And, you know, as you said, kids following their parents in the field, setting up the stands, knowing where you're going to be hunting, you know, figuring out what the best time, what the best weekend to go out there and do it. You know, it really is kind of one of those things where if it goes away, it is going to be, or it gets damaged, it's something that it's going to be hard to bring back. And we should remind people, this is a dangerous thing because it was, what, the 70s that half the fish you were pulling out of Lake Superior were having lesions on them. And we've had cases where, you know, pollution, disease has gone in and wiped out native populations of animals. That is just not something we want to keep revisiting.
Right, right. And I mean, and to your point, like, this is a very, there is a lot of our small businesses in rural Minnesota depend on folks coming in from out of town and going deer hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big financial impact, a much bigger financial impact by risking the deer hunting, industry, outside of whatever money stands to be gained from sort of this fringe section of folks who prefer to shoot an animal in that scenario. So it's just, there's just reason upon reason upon reason for us to be protecting this natural resource. And again, we just really hope it's not too late.
You guys, I mean, if you're a DFLer and you're looking for a source of pride, the work that you guys have done on committee in the House, on some of these issues, the pollinators issues and stuff like this, you guys are carrying the load and you're doing a great job down there. And these are issues which are kind of, they're not glamorous. They're not, it's the real sausage making of politics. And you guys are in there, and not only are you doing a great job, but you're doing a great job getting the, you know, kind of that DFL perspective out there. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for noting that. You know, I always tell people, you know, I did not go into running for office 5 years ago with the intention of being the voice on chronic wasting disease, but that's the nature of the job when something needs to be done, and there's a good fight like this that needs to be taken, then, folks like myself and some of the others I've mentioned have been more than willing to work on the things that are good and right when we need to.
Well, and that's the case of great politicians are the ones that you generally don't hear about because they're like yourself. They're steering away from a crisis before the crisis happens. And I can see it. I follow politics. I know exactly what you're doing. It's magnificent. And I hope that you guys all have all the success. I hope that people, the rest of the state comes around to it and realizes, okay, this is just not a game we want to play. And we preserve the deer herds from this. But yeah, like I said, the ones that are the most successful are the ones you never hear about because they stopped a problem before it started. And I hope that we can get some more headway on this this issue.
Yeah, no, and thanks for highlighting it on your show. I think the more people that are educated, the more traction we can get with some real progress on this.
Thank you very much. Representative Jamie Becker Finn, 42B, kind enough to join us today. Representative, thank you very much. We'll talk to you before too long, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. From a story we were talking about earlier today, Patrick has got a little bit of an update here, right?
Yeah, we were talking about the Proctor football team. All the major TV outlets in Duluth now reporting Proctor has canceled the rest of their football season.
Something tells me they've got enough evidence that it's... You know, here's the problem I have is what's been going on since the crime happened, since people became aware of the crime, it almost seems like, can we make this go away? And that would be my first sign saying, nope, it's not going to go away. So this is going to come on out at some point, what happened up at Proctor. But, what I just get tired of, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show, I get tired of, in Minneapolis, no one gives anyone the benefit of the doubt. It's always guilty. I mean, even when a bunch of thugs from out of the city came into our city and were burning stuff and looting stuff and causing damage, because a lot of the people that were doing all the problems after George Floyd were not from Minneapolis, from outstate and out of state. There are still people that say, I don't care, charge the people of Minneapolis. That was kind of their mentality. But those same people, when all of a sudden it's an athlete in not in the Twin Cities, out of there, it's all of a sudden like, sure, you know, beating someone to near death is a bad thing, but, you know, you got to think about this guy's career in life. He's got a lot of potential here. And you're like, what? What are you talking about? And, you know, we'll find out. We'll find out what exactly happened there. One thing about Representative Jamie Becker Finn, and this is, she kind of alluded to this, and I kind of alluded to this too. I really want to highlight the fact that the best are generally the ones that you never hear about. Kind of, they're working behind the scenes. They're working hard. They're getting stuff done, but you don't hear about them that much because they're averting crises. They are looking at something like this chronic wasting disease. And you might say to yourself, Mac, why are you dedicating time to this? Because she's absolutely 1,000% correct. Representative Becker Finn is 1,000% correct. If this gets out and really starts to spread through the deer herds of Minnesota out in the wild, wow, I can't even comprehend the economic impact alone in this state, not just at the outdoor stores and the places and the state's hunting licenses, but in rural communities where they depend on seasonal outdoorsmen tourism dollars in their community. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've lived up in the Iron Range multiple times. I lived over by Bemidji once. How many times come October, all of a sudden the bars are bringing in bands. They've got special ed coming on in. They've got the restaurants are doing, you know, outdoor, you know, tent seating because they're going to have so many people they can't fit them in the restaurant. This will be a huge impact to the state. If all of a sudden we have to start, you know, well, first of all, people aren't going to necessarily enjoy. Can't a lot of people eat the meat? And if you can't, you know, enjoy that, you know, if you're a hunter and you can't enjoy that, that's going to get a lot of people going away as alone. But it's far reaching, more deeper impact than I think people understand. And Jamie Becker Finn and Representative Rick Hansen, the fact that they are working as hard as they are right now to say, no, let's not go down this path. That they are the early warning system that's saying, hey, we can deal with this now, or we can spend millions and millions and millions of dollars down the road. And when we had Hansen on earlier, this is about a month and a half ago when we were talking about this, I think it was Hansen who made the comment. He said, I don't know why the Republicans are standing by deer farms when it's such a small percentage of the entire economic impact of the deer. But yet, that's what they were doing. And yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. But overall, I think that it's... I'm really just grateful for the work that's being done in regards to Jamie Becker Finn and Rick Hansen. DFLers, you can be proud of what's going on in those committees. You can be very proud of what's going on there. 952-946-6205. A Northwest Minnesota superintendent is charged with DWI after prosecutors say he was found drunk inside of the district vehicle parked outside of a school building. Wow. Along with driving while intoxicated, the 55-year-old Michael Gadbois is charged in Kitson County with open bottle, possessing alcohol in school grounds in connection with the incident, which took place September 25th in the city of Karlstad. A criminal complaint says Kitson County deputy and routine patrol spotted the Tri-County Schools van parked in front of the school in Karlstad with the hatch open, the radio playing, and several cases of what appear to be soda near the van. A door to the school was open, and the deputy figured someone was unloading supplies. Approximately 30 minutes later, the deputy returned to the scene and found the Gadbois in the driver's seat of the van with his head resting between his steering wheel and the floor. That's an interesting position. The deputy said his eyes were watery, bloodshot, and there was a very strong smell of alcohol. The complaint alleges that he was able to identify himself but failed to. Was asked to identify himself and failed to. Didn't have a wallet on his person. Was later found on the floor of the van. Prosecutors say Gadbois was asked to exit the vehicle and he was patted down with the interest of safety. When asked to perform a field sobriety test, the deputy says he fell backwards into the van and could not keep his balance. The superintendent was arrested. Breath test put his blood alcohol content at 0.21. He was really drunk. Twice the legal limit for driving. Yeah. My guess is he's not going to be the superintendent too much longer. 952-946-6205. We come back. Minnesota coronavirus update. Some other news as well. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. The Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Wednesday's update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,077 new cases, 31 newly reported deaths. Wow. The state death toll is 8,140 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 27th, the state reported that 3,389,906 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,227,882 people have completed the vaccine series. Through September 28th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 800. That is up 33 from yesterday, the 767 number yesterday. Of those hospitalized, 206 people in intensive care, 594 were in general hospital care. Just unbelievable numbers on the hospitalization. The 2,077 positive results on Wednesday's update were from 35,135 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 5.91%. Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 7.18, which is well above the 5% there. Oh, God. The cost yesterday, if you haven't seen it, and I did post this on both the Twitter page, at Matt McNeil Show, and then on the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show, the Summer Brennan story. I've heard from multiple people since I posted that, since she put it out, where her dad was not sick with COVID, but basically was almost given a death sentence because of all the unvaccinated COVID patients that had overwhelmed the New Mexico hospitals, that they could not, even though he started off with a leg injury, it became a pneumonia, and he needed to get into an ICU, but he couldn't find one because of all these idiot unvaccinated people who all of a sudden when they get sick, all of a sudden become born-again pro-scientists. Like, I need to get to the hospital because now I'm sick with the COVID, which I didn't even believe existed. I was arguing against. And so it's funny. I mean, if you're going to be consistent, be consistent. If you don't believe in the doctors and the nurses and the scientists that say it's dangerous while you scream about vaccines and masks, then when you get sick, have the common decency to not overwhelm the hospital system and just stick your guns. This is your standard. And just stay home. You'll weather the storm, maybe, maybe not. But at least then what's not happening is a person who for political reasons, went out there and dismissed coronavirus, you basically all of a sudden, well, now they have to save me, those evil people who I was vilifying just weeks ago. So anyway, so she basically shared her story, and it should also be mentioned that her dad is definitely, you know, the consequences of what happened are pretty severe. He's likely not going to be you know, going to have a quick recovery, and it's because he could not get into an ICU when he needed to get into an ICU. A lot of other people saying similar stories, talking about, in unfortunately, with more tragic results of people dying because they could not get a family member, a loved one, into an ICU unit because idiot, unvaccinated people had taken up all the space. The cost of treating, this is out of the St. Louis Dispatch, the cost of treating unvaccinated people for coronavirus infections were $5.7 billion just between June and August of 2021. Just between June and August of 2021. So in 3 months, $5.7 billion was spent treating unvaccinated people for coronavirus. The nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation had concluded this. In the world of healthcare, they might not be much because Americans spend about $3.8 trillion a year on healthcare, in 2019. So 5.7 billion represents just 0.14 healthcare spending. Overall, all healthcare spending, flu shots, regular checkups, all cancer treatments, you know, that's all. So 5.7, and that's just, and by the way, that's 3.8 trillion on healthcare in 2019 as a total. This is 7 in 3 months. So by your own math, you're going to have $22 billion. If those numbers were to hold for a full year, it'd be $22 billion just treating unvaccinated people for coronavirus. $22 billion, which then gets you up to quite a little bit more of a bite of the full medical spending. But in the world that most of us live in, $5.9 billion is a lot of money. It represents a staggering loss that didn't have to happen. Since mid-April, and safe and effective vaccines have been available without a charge to virtually every American adult, yet only 63% of Americans are fully vaccinated, 25% have yet to receive a single dose of the vaccine. In three Missouri counties, once again, this coming from the St. Louis Dispatch, 75% of residents haven't had a single shot. You're idiots. Well, it is Missouri. The mullet state. Sorry. The yep, nope. The Missouri Compromise. Those unvaccinated people fueling a huge surge in cases from June to August, that number that continued to grow into early September. The Kaiser study estimated that 530,000 adult coronavirus cases were admitted to American hospitals from June 1st to August 31st. Of them, the authors estimated that 86%, 455,800 people were unvaccinated. Coronavirus hospitalizations doubled in July compared to June. The study found they rose to 345,000 in August, up from 125,000 in July. In total, 287,000 hospitalizations from June through the end of August could have been prevented if more Americans were vaccinated. The study found those hospitalizations had an average cost of $20,000 each, which should be sobering news for the unvaccinated. And it should. Okay, let's... I have said three things since the beginning of this crisis. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years of your life. There are 62% of all Americans don't have any retirement accounts or any savings beyond check to check. If I remember correctly, that's the latest number I saw. I could have sworn I saw that about 2 months ago. 62% of the American workforce does not have a retirement account and lives basically check to check. They have no money really in their checking or savings account either. And how many people can weather a $20,000 charge just willy-nilly? And if you've got health insurance, great. If you've got good ones, but still, even if you've got to go with a copay, you know, you're still looking at what, $3,000-$4,000 of that? There's not many people in this country. As we talk about a country of great wealth and success, the reality is there's not a lot of people. A very small percentage of people can actually afford a $3,000 or $4,000 payment without it being fairly crippling to them. And, you know, where you're, you know, might be even, you know, selling off a car or downgrading a house. Or if you are one of the lucky people that does have some retirement account, having to burn through your retirement account early because you had the health issues. And that's even with a copay. There are a lot of stories I've heard of people in rural America that have gotten sick, that have lost their farms, have lost their houses. I don't want to see that happen. I mean, it's hard enough being a farmer today with the you guys have got. Just go get vaccinated. It's just go get vaccinated. Instead, you sit there, and I guarantee you, you'll somehow figure out some way to blame Joe Biden or the Democrats for the situation you're in. But the reality is that you could have prevented this by just going and getting vaccinated. And I was talking to someone today, and he brought up the point. It's like, I just don't get where they get this from. I said, exactly. Part of me just wonders if you truly do believe, go back to the numbers here from earlier today. If you truly do believe that vaccines are dangerous, well, 3,389,906 people, nearly 3,400,000 people in the state of Minnesota alone have at least one dose. 3,200,000, 227,000 to be exact, have received both doses. And yet, you guys want to sit there and make the comment like, oh, it's unsafe. Well, where are the massive morgues of vaccinated people? It hasn't happened. And there is, I mean, any fake symptom that you knuckleheads keep creating, we end up having to spend more money on research to say, no, it doesn't make you magnetized. No, it doesn't get rid of your or of your sex drive. It doesn't do these things. No. It is just, ugh. Just get vaccinated. There comes a point where your insistence, I was looking at this number too, and this is from the New York Times. A quarter of all the cases in this country, new cases in the world, a quarter of all the new cases in the world, and a quarter of all the deaths in the world are occurring in the United States of America. And we do not have a quarter of the world's population, for God's sakes. We have got a massive crisis here that has been fueled by ignorance, intentional ignorance, spread by Republicans who feel as if they can get points by endangering your lives. Just get vaccinated, please. Health Partner sent an email to staff, another story on this, on Tuesday, explaining that if they do not get the COVID-19 vaccine this fall, they'll lose their job. I'm actually with them on this. Your Health Partners, for goodness sakes. The provider and health insurance company announced the vaccine requirement on August 5th when nearly 75% of the staff, including 98% of clinicians, were vaccinated against COVID-19. However, Health Partners didn't share details of the consequences if someone doesn't get vaccinated by the October 30th deadline. That changed on Tuesday when Andrea Walsh, the president and CEO of Health Partners, sent an email to staff, which was forwarded to bring me the news, specifying the consequences for people who don't get the vaccine by the end of the month. With our COVID-19 vaccine deadline a month away, and in light of the new Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services mandate that requires COVID-19 vaccinations for employees of participating organizations, today we're sharing two important updates about our colleague vaccination program, Walsh said in the email. Those who do not get the COVID vaccine by October 30th will be paid 30-day leave of absence. Walsh said anyone who is placed on leave can return to work if they get vaccinated or have an exemption. But at the end of the 30-day period, colleagues who have not met the requirement will be deemed to have resigned. It's that simple. And you want to know the truth is I commend Health Partners because they're going with science. They're going with the intelligence. And these people, it's like, I've got a religious exemption. No, you don't. Unless you're driving a freaking horse and buggy, you don't. You're not some fringe religion, and you've probably been vaccinated by a lot of things, including probably got a flu shot last year. But because you want to make this political, all of a sudden you're acting as if there's something. My religion, Jeebus himself, said 2,000 years ago in 2021, when they come out with the COVID vaccine, don't get that one. I got all the rest of them. I didn't get that one. I mean, what kind of lunacy is that? That's why you guys are going to get laughed out of court. That's why you're going to get laughed at. You're not a protected class. As a matter of fact, anything, you're the unprotected because you're basically jeopardizing the rest of our lives. Julie is in Minneapolis. Julie, thanks for holding. Welcome on into the show.
Yeah, just a couple of quick points. I was in the hospital for a couple of days last week. No big whoop, really, just getting tests. And then when I got home, I turned on the radio and I heard a nurse say, you know, I don't really believe in the vaccine. She was a nurse who worked in the hospital. I'd like to wait a year or two to see how it goes for other people. And I realized, wait a minute, how dumb was I? Just think of all the nurses and aides that were helping me, putting their hands on me. A lot of them weren't vaccinated. And I thought to myself, you know what? The hospital should have had at registration a little sign that said, we don't require our employees to be vaccinated. That would kind of put the pressure on, you know what I'm saying?
Well, and by the way, and Julie, wouldn't it be a good idea If a hospital says someone can be there and unvaccinated, that's fine. But as a patient, I have the right to know that. And so that they have to have a different color name tag or something like this. And
I can say I don't. They should have had a little button that said, I'm not vaccinated. It doesn't have to be a big scarlet letter, but just a little button, I'm not vaccinated or I am vaccinated.
Well, go
I was good enough that I could have walked up to the nurse's station and gotten my blood pressure taken. I wouldn't have been a very popular patient if I had said, hey, you know what? I'd like my blood pressure taken by someone who's vaccinated. But so what?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's about your own health. You got to be an advocate for yourself. Julie, thank you very much. I say make it a very large scarlet letter, maybe a scarlet letter I for idiot. You know, that would be what I'd say. And by the way, I should mention on the health partner's story here, 98% of clinicians were vaccinated. So I think that most people in the medical settings are getting vaccinated. And especially from my hospital stay from earlier this year, one of the things I learned was that to be in Minnesota and Minneapolis, St. Paul based hospitals is kind of in the state of Minnesota is considered to be a major league. You know, it's the competition to get into these hospitals, to be part of these staffs is very difficult. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things where if you've worked really hard to get there and get into one of the major hospitals in town, one of the Fairviews or, you know, the U of M or, you know, Methodist or Children's or something like that, you are kind of one of the I don't want to say premier, but more visible hospital environments where you're getting, those are better paid jobs and you're getting into a better system. Then my guess is going to be is that do you really want to jeopardize that if you spent your career getting there by potentially, you know, losing your job because of not getting vaccinated? Something which, once again, up until this year, most people didn't really have a problem with, especially every year with the flu vaccine. Most people didn't have a problem with that. How many people got the shingles vaccine? HPV, how many people have gotten, you know, polio shots, have gotten rubella shots, and all these things, and all of a sudden, well, this one's against my religion. Well, no, it's just, you're just an ass, and you're basically trying to take Christianity down with you. So stop it. Vaccinated. Or maybe we do the scarlet letter I. I'm not against that, if you want to know the truth. I really am not. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One more story on coronavirus, and then a disturbing story from Axios on election workers. We'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'm still laughing at the guy. Okay, so down in that Carver County School Board meeting where the one guy tries to grab, the one unmasked guy tries to grab the phone of the masked guy because he was upset he was taking a picture of him, and it ends up getting into a fight. And yeah, you know what I find to be funny about that? Is all those anti-vaxxers or anti-maxxers, I should say, any of the anti-mask people who are there talking about their freedoms and liberty didn't understand, A, you're in a public meeting of the school board, so fair game. Anyone can take a picture if you like. But you idiots are sitting on camera. We can see you on camera. We all see you. Maybe you should understand the layout of the building before you start saying, hey, how dare you take my picture? We can screen grab you all day, you moron. And by the way, I'd be upset if they do not charge that guy with attempted theft, because that's pretty clear an attempted theft. He was trying to grab his cell phone, and that was not his cell phone. And so he grabbed another person who was holding their cell phone and tried to rip that cell phone out of their own hand. And just, yeah. But that's what the howler monkeys want, and they're being encouraged for civil disobedience. That's what they want to do. It's only a matter of time before, and here's the sad reality. It is only a matter of time before one of these knuckleheads pulls a gun out and starts shooting people because they're wearing a mask. And then all of a sudden, all of these same people who have been encouraging them, I never said that. I just said they were trying to kill everyone's kids. Why would anyone think I was acting and condoning violence? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can see that cab coming down the street. Election officials across Minnesota are facing threats, speaking of which, let's relate to it, are facing threats and vitriol from voters questioning the 2020 results, leading to some local administrators to consider early retirement, said Secretary of State Steve Simon. There is real anxiety out there among people who run elections, and it's deeply disturbing. False claims that the 2020 election were stolen, popularized by former President Trump and other Republicans, including some in Minnesota, are fueling backlash and intimidation campaigns across the country. A Reuters investigation published in September documented more than 100 threats of violence or death targeting election officials and workers since last year's race. Some threats in Minnesota have been serious and specific enough to report to law enforcement in January following the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Simon and his wife had to consider temporarily moving their family into a hotel. Secretaries of State in other states were getting visits at home from armed protesters, people brandishing guns. We had to meet with our local police chief and mayor and Capitol Police and come up with a safety plan. Simon's office has seen shifts in both the tenor and target of complaints from the public. Instead of raising concerns about the actions of specific candidates or campaigns, folks are now alleging that people running the elections are involved in the wrongdoing. One July tweet targeting Simon suggested treason punished by death was the only way to deal with them so it never happens again. Wow. Steve Simon. And by the way, I know Steve Simon. I know the Secretary of State. He is one of the most pleasant human beings I have ever met in my entire life. It is just truly an embarrassment that these Republican-fueled knuckleheads are doing this. And yeah, it's Republican-fueled knuckleheads. Jeez, just amazing. Simon condemned the rhetoric from Trump and others, saying it eats away at the fabric of a democracy and it eats away at the well-deserved confidence people have in elections. Instead of simply dismissing voters who believe what's become known as the big lie, Simon suggests telling them you've been misled by people peddling conspiracy theories for their own purposes. I know. I am much more of a jackass than Steve Simon, though. Steve Simon's a nice guy. I'm an absolute horrible human being. You're all morons. You're all morons who basically are so desperate to not have to look in the mirror and say, God, I have backed a horrible human being and he lost, that you basically will twist the world to a reality which matches your narrative. You're fools. But that's just me. I'm jackass. Anywho, I'm not going to claim that's going to break the fever on its own, he said, but I think that is important because it happens to be true. These people who have been taken by these dangerous conspiracy theories. The Justice Department has launched a new task force to investigate and prosecute threats against election officials in part of the FBI and U.S. attorney's offices. Meanwhile, some members of Congress, including Senator Amy Klobuchar, are pushing for stronger protection for election workers. Simon says he's also looking at possible state legislative responses. But as long as you got the Republicans on the right, that they're basically like, well, just because he said he wanted to murder you in your house and kill you in your sleep, I think that that's just, you know, potato, potato. As long as Republicans keep pushing this lie, this narrative. I mean, Gruenhagen was just out talking about, we're going to have to full audit. No, you're fueling delusional rants, you moron. But that's where we're at. That's where the Republican Party is today, is basing people to start fights at public school board meetings or people to threaten people like Secretary of State Steve Simon. There you are. I hope it's a proud moment for you, moderate Republicans, because your party's trash. Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see you.